Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to Personal Transformation, a show I like to call about transforming from child abuse into something greater than what you've been. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse here tonight. It's September the 24th, 7 o'clock. I'm broadcasting, like I said, at the Gatehouse, and it's at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard East, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, or Old Etobicoke, as I like to refer to it as, or as I know it. We can be reached at www.thegatehouse.org, and you can also call us at area code 416-255-5900, extension 225, to speak with either Paula or Maria or Brad, whoever may be on the house, and we can help you. Again, welcome to tonight. I'm basically going to be covering pretty much what I covered last week and a little bit deeper. And I think it's really necessary to go a little bit deeper because when I think about what I went through to where I am and what I'm still going through to get where I want to be, it's going to take, well, it's going to take some more work. And no better way to explain it than to use myself as an example and some of the things I'm trying to do to change. And maybe you might, it might work for you, it might not work for you, but that's what I'm here for. But anyway, like I say, my show, or this show I like to call Personal Transformation, it's a show about childhood sexual abuse, and I'm offering here peer-to-peer support for survivors. I'm neither a doctor or anything of the sort. So like I say, I'm only making suggestions on what I've done, and I'm making suggestions and examples of what we do at the Gatehouse. To help you in your healing to move forward. And that's what I'm here for. And I'm also here, and I can't say this enough, I'm also here as a voice for you, for anybody who's suffered with this problem from the past. And I will fight tooth and nail for anybody in this cause, whatever it takes, whatever matters, I don't care anymore, because I do not want to be silent anymore. And that's why I'm doing this, to show you that I'm not being silent. And I can show you, I'm showing you that, well, you know what? So I've had to hold this secret for over 40 years. I'm not about to do that anymore. And I'm out here, I'm also wanting to know that other survivors, you don't have to do that either. You can set yourself free as I'm doing now. And I have been doing for the last 5 years. I've been recovering, and I'm still recovering. I put it this way, if you knew me 5 years ago and saw me now, there's a huge difference in my personality, my demeanor, everything. Sure, I have some issues. Oh, hell, anybody still has issues, but I still have some issues I'm still trying to sort out. But I'm here to show you and to show you some ways that you can help combat that, so you don't have to feel like you were. Give yourself some self-worth. Make you feel validated, and give you a purpose like I've given myself. Like for what I'm doing here now, this to me is huge, huge, huge today. And the more I talk about it, the more I put the word out, the better it is for us all. I know here in Canada, our laws are pretty lax in regards to the problem. And never mind that, the bigger problem is the aftermath of people that have been abused. There's minimal help. Well, there's a Gatehouse here in Toronto, and there's other places you can go, but I mean, like for example, like one person I interviewed here a short time ago, Lynn McDonnell, a great interview by the way, and there's another person that offers help, and this is all free of charge. We're not charging you money to help you here. It's not about money. It's about helping you in your healing, about your recovery and getting past this. And the Gatehouse is purely funded by public funds. I mean, sure, we apply for grants and all that sort of stuff, but basically, we rely on the public to survive. We don't. The Gatehouse runs a minimal staff, and the majority of people that are here at the Gatehouse, I'm talking about facilitators and others, are basically volunteers. And including looking after the house, like the maintenance and stuff. It's all volunteer based. It's That's why we rely on the community to help. And then also it's great that people, when people come through the house like myself and others that have come through the house as a participant and then start facilitating. You know, that's really, really a huge, huge achievement on that individual. And it shows a lot of backbone and a lot of care for other human beings, which is so important when it comes to this matter, because it's such a sensitive and such a traumatic thing that anybody must go through and get through if you can. And this is a great example of what could happen or what you could do to come and get help for that awful thing we call child abuse, which we've gone through. And you know, it's funny because I've heard all kinds of things. You know, I don't like using that word survivor, and it's funny because it's been a bit of a well, I wouldn't really call it a debate, but it's been a topic of discussion. And some people I hear, they like to refer to themselves as a victim versus a survivor. Well, yeah, I can see their point behind that, but in reality, survivor is just a word, as so is just being a victim. The point being is, you were abused, and now what? You can call me whatever you want, but you're still here, and you're still dealing with the fallout of what happened to you. You know, everything from you could have post-traumatic stress. You know, you could have anxiety disorders. There's a whole bunch of things that are tied into this. You could have, for example, another example rather, you could be you could have, you know, troubles with addictions, for example. You could have trouble with relationships. You know, there's a whole host of things that happens to us after we've been through this experience. And some have a harder time than others, and some people have a really hard time, and some people, well, it's really, really, really sad to say, and I'm going to make reference to my brother, for example. He never got help, yet he was abused, and there was no help at that time anyway. Now there's help. I know. It's, as I've said, it's few and far between, but it is still out there, you know. And the internet's great now too, like Twitter. I can't believe it. Like I've talked about this countless times where I've gone on Twitter, and it's incredible the amount of support that I've got on there. I've met so many people that are survivors, and I've met people. I'm not just talking about here in Canada. I've talked about, like I said, I've talked about this before. I'm talking about internationally, like in the UK, United States. There's huge network of survivors that are helping people, and they should be, you know, there should be a great acknowledgement here of these people doing this. I mean, you know, some of them charge, some of them don't, but I think majority of them, the bottom line is they're there to help you, and even if it's through the internet, it's better than nothing because there's not a whole lot of anything out there, and it's fantastic. I love it. Like I go on Tuesday nights and I blog with these three ladies, which I've talked about before, and they deal with many different topics, stuff that I've talked about, and stuff that's in your head already that you're going through, and stuff that I've gone through, which I've talked about countless times, and which is really, really great because, you know, I think with the outlying areas, not just here in Canada, but in other countries where there's absolutely nothing, you know, I mean, absolutely nothing. So the fact is that you can go online and you can get some kind of support. Somebody who you can actually talk to that actually understands is a huge, huge, well, I guess you can call it a relief. I call it a relief because if I talk to somebody, an experience that I've had, and they're able to relate to what I'm talking about, like, the great thing about it is you're not alone. See, there's lots of us out there. And there's lots of us out there, I shouldn't, there's lots of us out there that are really serious about this topic and this problem and want to do something about it, like myself. It's so very important, and I'm going to keep pushing, like I say, until I can't push no more or until I'm told not to push anymore. Whatever may come first, as long as I behave myself in a professional manner, I should have no trouble whatsoever. And I stay cool, I'm calm and cool about what I'm doing and what I'm talking about. I don't piss anybody off because I'm not here to piss anybody off. I'm only here to help, to show you other ways of behaving or to react to your past abuse. And like I say, I said at the beginning of the program, I am not a doctor. I'm only offering you peer support. So anything I say to you is only purely a suggestion. And if I make an example, it is maybe I've tried it myself or I've seen other people, but primarily it is your choice. to do what you choose on how your path is, you're going to heal. I've also talked about being spiritual. That's a big important thing. It doesn't matter what you belong to. I don't care if you practice the Muslim faith, if you're a Christian, if you practice Buddhism. There's many other different things that you can follow as far as your spirituality is concerned. It doesn't matter as long as you get some kind of support and just to keep you grounded. And it's so important in this process, keeping yourself grounded, because as I've talked about, and you'll find out through over a period of time, you start digging into your past. Well, I hate to say this, but if it doesn't hurt, then you can't figure out what's going on. And if you can't figure by hurting, then you know that it bothers you. So you know that there's something there, there's something hidden there, or you just plain know what it is. And that is where you start with sorting out your issues that you're having. And that's the great thing about the Gatehouse. I've learned a lot of really, really great tools. And as I've said, I'm still working on some stuff, and I'm not shy to say it. I'll talk about it. And as far as I'm concerned, the only way I see is up, not down. And I'm here to show you that I, furthermore, will do whatever I can to accomplish that. And that's the great thing about coming to the house, is that they offer that. And it's wonderful. It's great. But you know what I want to do before I get into a little bit more? I'd also like to mention about, I've talked about self-help. Well, there is self-help books out there, and I'm going to mention a couple of them to you, and maybe you can order them online. Most of these books you can get online, but I'm going to talk about three people right off the bat. Well, right off, I'm going to talk about Deb Mayberry. That's another lady that I've interviewed. She wrote a book called Unlock the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse, and this is a beautiful book. It's got many different stories. It's got insight. And for anybody who's trying to understand this type of trauma, this is a great book to read to understand how people react and how they how they react. I mean, with relationships and people, their jobs, all this stuff. And this book I talked about from Deb Mayberry, I'm lucky enough to be in it. Actually, she's probably the very first person I really told my story to, other than when I wrote it down myself, but it certainly wasn't, like I said, when I told it to her. And I am very, very grateful that I had this opportunity to have this opportunity to let her interview me, to be in her book about this. And if you want to get it, you can Google it online. I believe you can get it on Amazon as well, but you can also go to www.debmayberry.com and you can order it there. And let me also point out too that Deb Mayberry, she is also a facilitator at the Gatehouse here as well. I facilitated with her as well. Like I said, she's a wonderful woman. She's very and she's very accomplished in many, many ways. She's done many, many things, like cycling across Canada, for example. I know when she was in here the last time, I don't think we even talked about that, but she's done that. She's cycled across Canada. Bicycling, I'm talking about. She's a black belt in Kung Fu. She did that for many, many, many years. There's a lot to be learned from this lady. Lots to be learned from this lady. And she's a great example of what I call transformation on moving forward. And like I say, you can get her book through www.debmayberry.com, and you can email her at deb@debmayberry.com. And she also does, she classifies herself as a Harmony Integrational Practitioner. And she's also, like I said, she's obviously an author, but she speaks, and she's also a life coach as well. She's got lots of great insight, and it's always been a pleasure to be around her, and really a really good pleasure, especially when I'm facilitating with her. And I've done a few groups with her, so I'm very, very honored to be around and be in her presence. Another lady I've talked about, actually I kind of just talked to her about it briefly, for example, is Lynn McDonald and Associates. Granted, she doesn't have a book, but she's also part of what do you call it now? She's lost her words here. But anyway, she offers, she's a psychotherapist. She deals with trauma issues. And I believe she's with the Men of Hope Project out of the US. And they offer support for survivors as well, both for men and for women, I may add. And she's a wonderful lady. I had a great interview with her. But anyway, back to the books I was talking about. Another book I want to talk about too as well. I talked about being on Twitter and about support. And I must point this out because it's very important as far as I'm concerned, because these ladies are wonderful. I'm going to talk about Rachel Thompson. She wrote a book called Broken Pieces. But let me be quite clear. I've not read this book yet, and I will do that through the winter months. It's hard when you have as much on the go as I have. So, but I do intend to get it and read it, and to see what that's all about. But you can get her book through www.amazon.com. And like I say, she does a segment along with Bobby and Athena. They have a weekly show on Twitter, and it's on at they're on the West Coast, so it would be 9 o'clock our time, or and 7 o'clock or sorry, 6 o'clock their time, because it's a 3 hour difference. And they cover pretty much everything that we cover here, and they offer self-help as well. Anyway, they're wonderful ladies, and I would encourage you that if you're on Twitter, check them out. And they have some great insight, and I know even Bobby, she's a wonderful woman, and she's got years and years of experience. Actually, all three of them have got years of experience, never mind writing books and doing stuff like that, but they've got lots of experience, great insight, and they've been, well, I know they've been helpful even to me in some cases, but I really love their insight and stuff that they talk about. And always a pleasure to be online with them when they're on. Another person I cannot forget about is Tom Wilkins. I've talked to him about in the beginning when I started, and to now. And right now I have a copy of this is his second edition, Rebuilding Your House of Self-Respect. This book is basically oriented towards men recovering in from childhood sexual abuse. And I'm going to be quoting from his book a little bit here, because I feel really necessary to read a little bit about it. And it's basically it's going to make reference basically to men, but nevertheless, it's a wonderful book, and I would recommend anybody to order it. And you can get that. Let me just find it here. Da 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 da. Pretty bad, eh? See, I should have wrote that down. Anyway, excuse me. Anyway, if you go in and you Google it, you can find it without any trouble at all. He's a Canadian author, and I've had the opportunity of. I know the Gatehouse has had three conferences, or rather, well, actually, just. They've had four conferences, but the last three conferences I've been at through the Gatehouse, Tom has been there and spoke. And he is a wonderful, wonderful man. He's got lots of great insight, but all I can say is go and order his book. And like I say, the name of the book is called Rebuilding Your House of Self-Respect. And I'm going to get into that and talk about that a little bit more. Or rather, I'm going to quote from it, from the book, just so you get an idea where Tom's coming from. And what he's offering. And it's really good, well written, and it's got some good stories in it from survivors. So it'll help you understand that, like I've said time and time again, you're not alone. There's other people out there that are going through the same issue and trying to find a way to get past this. Well, another person I would like to lay a plug to, I was so lucky the other day. I was talking through, obviously through Twitter, a gentleman by the name of Lee Farrell. When I first came here, I guess it'd be 5 years ago now, I came here, and Lee Farrell was one of my was my facilitator, him and Kenny. But anyway, Lee is still around, and I see him on Twitter, and he is the founder of Men of Hope, and they are based out of Belleville, Ontario. And you can email at www.menofhope.ca, and you can reach Lee there, especially if you're out in the eastern part of Ontario, and if you're looking for help, there's another example of some place to go to get some kind of healing for your past abuse. And I could not, actually, I can't wait to actually see him or talk to him, because I asked him if I could get an interview, and he agreed to do it, so I can't wait, and I cannot wait for that. And I owe a lot to where I am now to him. He may not think that, but I think that because if he took the time out and cared enough about a group of men that have been through this experience, you know, that's says leaps and bounds about an individual, especially for him to take the time after you know, he's done his own healing himself and try to sort his own life, and he's taking the time to come here and help us. That's to me, that's huge, really, really huge. And an honor to have had him as a facilitator when I first came here, and I'm really honored to still be friends with him. And it's great because when I came here, I don't think when I came here, I know he wasn't doing this, but now he's doing this. As I've told you, he's the founder of Men of Hope, and he's offering peer support to other survivors. Again, like wow, that's incredible, like really, really incredible that he does this. He does this all on his own time. And he doesn't ask anything from anybody. It's just you got to be there. That's the big thing. You got to be there. You got to make that commitment. Like for example, when you come to the gatehouse, or I've talked about the programs. I'm gonna go through the programs again, even briefly there tonight, just so you know what we have of all levels for men, women, and couples, and also the youth as well, because we cover all those areas. Again, oh geez, I'm so humbly so humble and happy to be here. But I guess I should kind of move on to what I'm talking about. Okay, last week we were talking about sexuality and relationships, and I went a little step further to talk about myself and my own experience and how certain things trigger me in regards to relationships and friends, basically. When I made reference to alcohol and when certain things were said to me, and I made reference to how when I was being abused, those things were thrown at me as well. So by saying this and covering this again, you need to understand, well, the basic mechanics of how that all works. What I mean by that is, for example, well, how would alcohol, like, how would alcohol affect me? I mean, obviously, it's pretty obvious how alcohol would affect anybody, but I'm talking about from a psychological point of view, like from a survivor's point of view. So think about that just a little bit. Just think about that a little bit. So if you're around somebody when they're drinking and they get drunk, for example, okay, and okay, I don't really don't give crap about that one way or another. But my point being is, if you're around those people when they're drinking, and things are said or things are done that trigger you or set you off to do, well, what I would call irrational things or irrational, excuse me, behavior. As one as one good example I'll give is like running away and disassociating yourself with people. You know, that's one thing I've done, and I know other people have done that as well. And I've also talked about last week when I said how being in a relationship and being close to somebody and certain things are said, and how I made reference to my abuser in the past or abusers in the past telling me that that well, I might as well just say the way I said it last week, for example, how they love me and my parents didn't love me. Now, in reality, what I'm saying right now, in reality, and that is a whole pile of bullshit as far as I'm concerned, because think about it. You know, that's to me what they're doing, so you understand, and I already understand this already, is that that's just another form of control. That's what abusers do. That's how they control you, to shut you up. That's how they control you, or like that's what they did. I know that's what my abusers did. That's how they controlled me. That's how I, one reason why I kept my mouth shut for so long. Never mind not being able to find any help out there, but how they kept me quiet. And I've talked to other survivors, and there's many different other ways that I've heard that they were told to keep quiet or else. You know, when you're a child, I think that's pretty damn scary if you ask me. Like, really scary. So you know, and if you don't have the support as a child, like such as your parents around or whoever your guardians are at the time, and you don't have that connection, then you're basically on your own. You're basically on your own, like as I was, and my brother, we were basically on our own. My brother and I, we bounced around from home to home. We finally had some stability when my brother and I finally went out to my grandparents' place. But even then, we were only there for a certain amount of time. And then I remember we moved to the East Coast, and I stayed there for a while. I ended up moving back because I ended up getting abused down there as well. And I've even said this before. I ended up coming back because I got abused there as well. And that just messed me up more. So I ended up coming back to Ontario. And anyway, that's pretty much what happened. But my point being is I've talked about alcohol, and I've talked about how words will affect you, like I'm talking about trigger. And it's when I think about it now, and never mind that, not just thinking about it, it's logically it's a bunch of crap. Like why would I let something like that after all this time control me to now? Think about it. And I know I've heard of some other survivors as well, or victims. I'm going to keep going back and forth on that. But anyway, if you're a victim and you've had to live with this for, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, over 40 years, even 50 years, I've met victims that have had to live with this and have had no help. And also, think about the ones that have never told anybody and gone to the grave about this. I know I've talked about this as well, but that's to me is very, very that to me that's equally important because it's also one of my drives why I'm doing this. Because what about the ones that don't have a voice? They don't have a voice. I have a voice. You have a voice. If you're listening to me, you definitely have a voice. So to me, that's all the more reason why to say something about this, make people aware, understand. I make them understand about the stigmas they talk about sexual abuse, like. Just because you're abused doesn't mean that you're going to abuse. Let me be quite clear. Remember, I talked about Canadian statistics, and never mind even just about Canadian statistics, whether it be American or in Europe. Typically, well, I'm sure I'll be standing corrected if I'm wrong, but it's like less than 1% or around 1% of people that have been abuse themselves, and that's a very small percentage when you look at the numbers overall. I don't even like using numbers because I don't consider myself a number, even though I feel like one, or something along like that. Anyway, but nonetheless, it's still an issue. And like I've said, they can't talk, so I'm talking, and you can talk, and that's why I'm here. And it's so daunting, and in some ways it's kind of scary. I'm sitting here talking about this, but I figure, well, what the hell? What the hell have I got to lose? And I think about all that I threw away, basically, and I'm quite clear about that. I literally threw a lot of stuff away because not having any self-esteem or really giving a damn, that's what people do, right? That's what you do when you don't have any self-esteem or self-worth. You don't care about stuff like that. I'm not never been a materialistic person or anything like that. Not that being materialistic really has anything to do with it. That's just one of the factors that's part of this. I couldn't care less about a lot of things. And all of you dived into these secrets, another thing. Talk about that some more. It's amazing what people do when they're down and out and they have all these things that are holding them back. And that's why I'm talking about what I'm talking about. It's so, so, so important people to understand that, I'm still a human being, and I do care. I have lots to offer society. Granted, what I have to offer society right now is not a very, well, it is positive because what I'm talking about is ways of getting out of that negative feeling that you've been carrying all your life, and to find ways of not doing self-harm to yourself anymore, and stop sabotaging yourself. There's other ways of getting around that, and I'm here to talk about that. It's about being vulnerable, like I'm being vulnerable right now. I'm talking about stuff I never thought, Not in the least, a little bit, for 1 second, like a year ago or 2 years ago, that I'd even be sitting here doing what I'm doing here right now. You know, and I say, damn anybody who challenges me on that, because you know what? It's not about, to me, it's not about all the other things that go along with doing radio and TV, all that kind of stuff. I don't think about that. I think about it just one thing. So I'm exercising my voice, and I'm showing you that you can exercise your voice. Now, I talked about vulnerability, you know, and this is one of the good things about being vulnerable that I've really learned. By talking about it, it makes you vulnerable. So when you're being vulnerable, what you're doing, you're giving your secrets up that you've been holding, for one thing. You're giving yourself a source of by the way, you're taking the power away from your abuser, and being a victim or a survivor, you're basically self-empowering yourself. Because when I keep referring to that word voice, well, this is what you're doing. This is what I'm doing. You know, vulnerability. Any sign of weakness or vulnerability is unthinkable. If others discover that we are weak, they will have the power over us, and this knowledge will be used against us. Life after abuse feels like a battlefield. We become like little warriors, constantly striving to guard ourselves from being wounded or hurt again. That's what we all do, the victim and survivors. Anybody who's been through any kind of PTSD or post-traumatic stress. I don't care whether you're, let me rephrase that, I do care. But it doesn't matter is what I'm trying to say. No matter, regardless of your trauma, whether you were in the military, for example, and I say that with utmost respect, or you're a survivor of a street fight with guns and knives, I'm just giving you examples, okay? That's all I'm saying. I'm just giving you examples. And believe me, I have the utmost honor for anybody who I'm talking about. But my point being is I'm talking about post-traumatic stress or the trauma after the actions were taken against you, or after your abuse was done to you, and about being vulnerable, and how that empowers you, and how this kind of ties into what I talked about last week, and what I've talked about even before. You know, I talked about I've talked about sexuality and relationships. You know, and again, I'm going to be very clear. When I'm talking about relationships, I'm not just talking about heterosexual. I'm talking about gay, lesbian, transgender, and even just basic friendships. That's simple, because, you know, like with myself, as I've described, I know that if I feel that somebody is getting into my space and I feel uncomfortable, I basically take a dive and I run, because I'm scared. I don't want them to know me, because you know, I think about this quite often. Well, why would I do that? Well, It's now that I understand what's going on, it's like this. It's to me, or rather not to me, what it is just a defensive mechanism. That's what we do. That's how we cope, or rather, let me rephrase that. It's a coping skill. That's what it is. It's a coping skill. That's how I cope with what was done to me in the past. I'm not saying that it's right, but that's what I do. And other victims do the same thing. The victim survivors, they do the exact same thing. They do something. And you know what? I should say this as very well as well. Let me be quite clear that not all victims or survivors do stuff I've talked about. I've met a few that haven't. Rather than act out like I've done and others have done, some of them have come across. Like, for example, I've talked about Deb Mayberry, the one that wrote the book I was talking about at the beginning. There's an example of someone who rather than fall and get into some kind of addiction or something like that, she always found strength in trying to find personal accomplishments for herself. And that was how she got past it, versus, you know, instead of getting involved in drugs or alcohol, or I'm just using that as an example, right? And instead of falling and crashing that way, she found other ways to empower herself. And to me, that's very, 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 very powerful what she's doing. But you know, not everybody can do that either. You know, not everybody has that kind of strength. And it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. It makes no difference. Everybody has their own, I guess you has their own levels of tolerance and or ideas. And this woman I'm talking about is a great example of not. Granted, she had an issue and she knew she had a problem and she knew she was abused and she knew that she was messed up from it, but she chose not to fall by the wayside like many others have, like myself as well. And she's a great example of what could happen to you if you don't. And that's why I say this woman's very admirable, and I'm always in awe when I'm around her because she's a great inspiration. But I've talked about being vulnerable and being vulnerable is a huge, huge thing. I know I kind of touched base with it last week, but let me give you a little bonus read about vulnerability. I've had friends say to me from time to time, things just seem to flow for you. Jobs, relationships, they just seem to come to you. Well, why is that? Well, I've never really been able to answer this question very well, but as I reflect upon the concept of flow, as was reminded of a moment that ended up being a huge turning point for me. I'll give you a punchline first, and then I'll tell you the dirty details, okay? Well, okay. I lost my job one day, and I got hired for a new job the next day. Now, let's go back in time. While still working as a mentor for teens in 2009, each leader was asked to write up a personal profile that would be shared with the parents and teens. One of the questions was, "What are your dreams and aspirations?" Now, the typical response were often was about was wanting to start a family, some career goal, or travel someplace, different place, while surely having some similar intentions for my life, like for example, like Italy. I'd love to go to Italy. When I thought about what I really dream and aspire to be or do, I realized that my answer would be not to fit the status quo. So my decision presented myself: go with the standard response, or now there's a word I haven't used too often, and I really like this word, is be authentic. To live in such a way that people are better off for having known me, to love unconditionally or to forgive radically, or to live with integrity. Now those thoughts are so key to who I am that putting them out there for just anyone to see is stepping into being vulnerable. And giving up and being sting with myself by sharing also meant by risking and misunderstood or being judged. A week after the profile was written, I got a call. Remember, I'm quoting and I'm just reading back. So I got a call back from my mom that I had seen posting, and she said, "Well, I read that immediately, and I knew for someone I needed to contact to connect with me." So I had about an hour of conversation getting to know each other. She started with me about her company and the products and distribution and meal replacement products. I had no interest in becoming a salesperson, but I filed it away, and something to keep in mind for others, right? The day after I lost my job, I called her because I had some extra cash. I had severance package and wanted to give her products a try. So now the conversation began by her, which is fine. I said, "Well, it's been an interesting week yesterday, but I went to explain what happened to my job. So I decided to share about the possibility of tutoring opportunity. I had a lineup, but I hadn't yet heard back from her." To which she said, "Okay, I'm looking for a tutor for my daughter. So how about I hire you?" And there you go. I had a new source of income. And on top of that, because she knew my situation, she offered me work with me on the cost of her products so I could go ahead and give them a try. See, well, like I said, that's an example of vulnerability. Granted, it's not a great example, but it gives you a good idea. And I know I covered this last week, but I just wanted to dive into it a little bit one more time about, especially about being vulnerable, because being vulnerable is so important. Excuse me. Being vulnerable is so important, and it's a big part of the healing process. And I know I've learned for myself that it's been very, very important in my healing process. So, for example, now let's dive into trust a little bit, and we're going to dive into and dive into isolation a little bit, and secrecy a little bit more. But I'm telling you, like I've been saying right from the beginning, these things are all kind of tied into one another. Everybody's different, so I'm not saying that all these aspects will basically define you. It doesn't necessarily define me, but it gives you some examples where maybe some of these things might be part of your life or you could relate to, basically. But let me be quite clear, like I say, just these examples I'm talking about or the stuff I'm talking about does not necessarily mean that it reflects on you. Some of the things might, and it might not. But nonetheless, these things need to be said. Like trust building. Okay? Moving out of isolation, trust building is a crucial first step. And that is so right. So right. When I came here the first time, I still have trust issues. Granted, not as bad as before, but some things are still bad as far as I'm concerned. But nonetheless, I'm working on it. I'm not afraid to talk about it or say about it. Like I say, trust building is a crucial first step. This is an essential element in maintaining confidentiality as opposed to keeping secrets hidden. We like we did with the secret of childhood sexual abuse. Peer sharing can facilitate growth from isolation, which can impede our ability to move forward to inclusion, which makes us powerful. New choices available. That's what I'm talking about, being vulnerable. By doing that, it's kind of like a little help for trust, right? Because you're basically talking about your past. You're talking about your childhood abuse from the past. That's being vulnerable. Now, isolation. I know I've talked about this stuff before, and I'm going to keep going back and forth on some of the stuff, and it's probably going to seem like it being a broken record, but not completely. Because in order to fulfill that dream of getting past this, being a victim or a survivor, you need to work on these things. You need to dig deep and try to find out what's holding you back. And these things I'm talking about with most survivors or victims I've talked about, have these stigmas, or rather, not should call them stigmas, but rather they have these issues with themselves. Isolation is a critical development and understanding of the difference between keeping secrets and asking someone in confidence to hold or honor your experience. Added to this is a complicated layer of honoring disclosure of one's own story at one's own pace. See, that's very key, okay? One of the good things about coming here to the house is, when you come here, okay, granted, each group we have are in 16 weeks. Okay, now, I've said this before. If you do this 16 weeks and you feel you need to do it over again, well, that's all right. And the point behind that is that what I'm getting at here is that everybody heals at their own pace. In other words, this is not a bloody race, okay? It's not a race. Think about it now. Why the hell would you want to race? It's something you have to dissect this apart. You got to find out, you got to dig deep in your soul, and you got to figure out what the hell is going on with yourself. Why are you reacting this way to the things I've talked about, either both myself and others? You need to dissect it. And I know that even sounds kind of clinical, but it's the cold reality of it all, and it's the truth. You need to figure out what the hell is going on. It is critical that every person feels that they're being allowed to come out of hiding from their own, in their own pace. That's the model of the house. You need to come out in your own pace. There's no hurry. You get there when you get there. The purpose is not to make people reveal their story, but rather to explore the differences between what we were told as children and our present day need for community and personal connection in order to heal. You know, you heal at your own pace. You don't, I can't say that enough, and I'll probably keep saying it. You heal at your own pace. You don't, it's not a race. And, I'm quite comfortable saying that too. Like I've said lots of times, I have some things I'm still working on. I know other victims too that are quite open about it as I am, and are quite willing to be vulnerable and say what I'm saying. And that's the great part or the strength about doing this is being vulnerable and talking about this. That's what helps get you past it, because as I've said before, the more I talk about my own personal crap, as I like to refer to it as, from the past, or my past abuse, the easier it is for me. And anybody else I know doing the same thing as I am is basically feeling the same as what I'm feeling. You know, let me also be quite clear as well. I should be quite clear about this. I mean, sure, there's the odd individual that, that's not fair. I can't go to where I'm going with this. The bottom line is you heal at your own pace. If it takes you 6 months, it takes you 6 months. If it takes you a year, it takes you a year. If it takes you 2 years, it takes you 2 years. It's a slow progression, step by step, as I've been talking about. There's no shortcuts unless there's a miracle pill, which I've yet to see. But nonetheless, basically, we're basically sharing what we were never told to share, or basically told to tell. Call it what you will, but basically, our motto at the Gatehouse is that we believe that no one should suffer in silence. Many adults have suffered in silence about their childhood experiences before they were found at the Gatehouse. Silence is isolation, is perpetrated, imposed crime meant to undermine the child's anatomy. This constitutes, in our society, as one of the most heinous crimes against child personal development and social safety. The group experiences and addresses the community responsibility we hold together to reach out to those who have been silenced and isolated by their experiences of childhood abuse. Secrecy and childhood abuse. In the instance of child abuse, keeping the secret is absolutely necessary for the perpetrator in order to avoid consequences and to allow continued availability to the victim. The longer the secret is held, the longer the behavior is able to continue. The offender usually knows that this conduct is against the law, and therefore is not averse to telling the child that bad things will happen to them and will happen if the secret gets out. Many wonder why children do not tell. The threat aspect is one of the reasons. Children will usually keep a secret unless the confusion and the pain is too great, or unless they accidentally revealed it. Many never tell or do not disclose the secret until years later, or not at all, as I've stipulated. They go to the graves with it. To some, the experience is so harmful and traumatic, they actually forget or block the experiences. When the other problems arise in adulthood, therapists often find that, to their surprise to the victim, that the childhood abuse is what blocked them and is the root of their present problems. And I can relate to that so easily, very, very, very well. And I've talked to other survivors and met other survivors telling me the exact same stories. Well, not exactly the same stories, but very, very, very similar. It was their story. You know, and I think about growing up and from my teens to my early 20s and my 30s, you know, when I became a parent, that was my distraction. When I became a parent, that's how I pushed my abuse off the side. Even though prior to me becoming a parent, I didn't really know why I was all messed up. And that was a great distraction for me for many, many, many years until I found my freedom again. And when I found my freedom again, that's when things slowly started to go awry, because when I did finally have my freedom again, I'm basically, the journey I was on when that happened to me after that, is I was trying to discover myself, who I am, because I really didn't know who I was. And, you know, even now, well, I certainly know who I was a hell of a lot better than I did from the time we were talking about, but it's been a real struggle to figure that out and to figure out that now that I'm actually that I can be a decent human being. I generally care about other people and overall mankind, man, womankind, right? There has to be better out there, and I'm going to show you that there is out there, because there is people who do care and have empathy and do want to help, like the gatehouse, for example. And there's people generally do care. So, question for you all out there. Is anybody, can you, I'm sure there must be a way that you must be able to relate to what I'm talking about, especially if you're any of your survivors. You must easily relate to what I'm talking about. Okay, now, I've talked about, how I talked about Tom Wilkin at the beginning of the story, and I know I talked to us this from the beginning when I first did the show, but now, remember how I was talking about how all these things are intertwined together, all like a little, like in a, well, this is my rendition of it, or my ideal of it, like a ball, everything's all connected together, like wires and crap, right? They're all interwoven like a wool sweater, One leads things to the other, and the other leads to that, and this leads to that. And anyway, I'm going to read the 10 steps of basically from Tom regarding the recovery of sexual abuse or incest, if you want to call it that. Number one is we talk about denial. Usually, denial is usually for people who have been trapped in a state for many, many years. As of kind of what I've been reading already, after physical nature of abuse has ended, many survivors develop addictive or compulsive behaviors while attempting to mask the feelings of emotion connected to their childhood sexual abuse. Another stage, number two, again, I'm quoting Tom Wilkins, okay, is confused awareness. At this stage, people begin to recognize the connection between their past trauma and their present concerns. This is the awareness that may introduce feelings of anxiety, panic, and fear. Things I've talked about, again, like I say, these things are connected together. Okay, number three, reaching out. Survivors can be in a situation which prolongs the silence become more painful than the risk involved in speaking out. Receiving individual counseling and/or joining support groups may play a role in the healing process. I talk about people coming to the house here, but there are some people that they need a little bit more than the house, a little bit more than help from the house, peer support. Again, I can't say this enough. Everybody's at their own different level of trauma, and everybody has their own, or would have their own level of the process of healing. So, sometimes people need a little bit more help. So that's when you go to a doctor, a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a sex therapist, as for example. I talked about Lynn McDonald. She does psychotherapy and trauma issues, for example. I had Charmaine Lovett in here. She's a life coach. She's a transformational practitioner. I've talked about her. You can Google her and you'll find her as well. As an example where, being in a group may not necessarily be the best thing for you. Maybe you need one-on-one help. My point being is everybody's different, and everybody needs their own unique kind of help, and that's what you got to figure out, or get someone to help you figure that out. Number three, reaching out. Survivors can be in a situation which, oh yeah, sorry, I've already read that. Sorry. Number four, okay, anger. Anger. After survivors reach out and become more aware of the impacts of the abuse, they often deal with intensified anger. This in anger is expected to naturally be part of the healing process. Thoughts, disclosure, and confrontations may dominate this stage. Anger may be channeled towards anyone who excused or protected the abuser, anyone who did not believe their disclosure of the abuse, and anyone they feel should have been concerned or never took steps to help. The stages of recovery from child abuse and incest. That's, I've talked about this as well, and I can't talk about. I'm sure I can just do a whole segment just on anger, on all the different facets of how you're going to react, and ways of getting yourself out of that anger. And as I've just said in this number four that I'm talking about here now, by getting angry, well, angry, getting angry, I'll dive into this a little bit more. One thing I've noticed about myself with being angry is that it stirs things up and it helps me recognize what's actually bothering me. And by doing so, then that to me is a tool to change those things that make me angry, or to find a way. I know I haven't talked enough about this, but the whole process of what I'm learning here, what I've learned here, and anybody coming to the house is about learning to be mindful and to pause when you get triggered by something that makes you angry. And if you're able to recognize that's part of the process, and that's part of the process of healing. And that's where it falls back to being vulnerable again. See what I mean by how these things are all kind of intertwined? I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're, being vulnerable and being angry are the same thing. I'm not saying that at all. Or having anxiety or being depressed means the same thing. All I'm saying is that they're intertwined and they all somehow they correlate, or rather not correlate, but they mesh together, and then you have this big ball of a mess. And that's what I'm pointing out. And I'll be quite clear again, not everybody has these issues. Everybody's different. Everyone's going to have a different thought process. Everyone's going to have a different reaction, whether it be worse than the other person or not as worse. I'm only giving you examples. You have to make your own decision on regards to yourself. I certainly can't do that. Like I've stated, I'm only offering you peer support. Now, number five, depression. At this stage, adult survivors may recall a negative messages or criticisms that they received from their abuser as a child. Okay, now, before we go any further with this, I've talked about this. Remember I talked about alcohol, and I talked about that word love, okay? Where the person that took the first female, my first female abuser, and the same female that took my virginity, that's what I'm talking about. That's where that person used that with me, and I had one male abuser used to do that too. But the weird thing about it is just, well, I have to behave myself because I can't talk crap. That's right. Okay, so I'll behave myself anyway. This is a gentleman. Oh, that's right, not a gentleman, but this is the. I can't say this. This is the ass that used to hit me, and. But the part that really made me confused when he used to do that, why would he tell me that my parents didn't love me, that he loved me, and yet he used to hit me? I don't understand that. I'm ever glad I don't behave like that. I never could understand that whatsoever. I can certainly understand what made me angry as a young teenager or a child, and even as a young adult, but I do not. I understand why a person has to do that, and neither do I really care to, because it's all BS as far as I'm concerned, and a total waste of thought space. But nevertheless, that's what it's about, and I'm using my example so you can understand that maybe you can relate, and maybe get something out of this. If this seems valid to adult survivor, this may cause him or her to become depressed and feel unable to make a positive changes. The symptoms and triggers of their own depression identified and appropriate support is found, the chances of being overwhelmed with feelings of despair may be minimized. I've talked about a little bit about my little my bouts of depression, and I haven't really dove a whole lot into it. I've had some pretty nasty experiences, which I'll probably come up with someday. I'll talk about it on here. I'll talk about some, but I won't. I'm not too comfortable talking about all, because some of my experiences, trust me, I really don't really. I'll talk about it, but I'm not so sure I want to talk about it live, and at least not at this particular point. I have disclosed it already, like in the talk about some of my actions as being depressed, and those are memories I really don't care too much to go back on, even though I do acknowledge it. And if I had to show somebody that okay, well, here you go, man. Now here's an example of being vulnerable again. Okay, I'm going to share one experience with you of being depressed, and hence what I said. Now I'm going to be vulnerable. I'm going to tell you. Okay, another little tidbit about myself. Okay, I had one period of my life when I was very, very, very depressed. And one of the things I did when I was depressed is rather than wanting to, well, I guess you can call it not wanting to be responsible for myself, I guess would be the correct term to use. So I chose to go live out on the street. And granted, that wasn't a great experience. Sure, I had fun sometimes. And I even got abused a few more times. And that's not a great experience. And I tell you, sleeping on the street, sleeping under a bridge, or finding a grate where it's warm when it's like minus 30 out to stay warm so you can go to sleep, isn't a lot of fun. It's not something to be proud of. When I think about it, now please keep this in mind. I did this to myself. Nobody told me to do this. And in reality, when I think about it now, I didn't have to do that. I could have resorted to other things. I mean, granted, I wouldn't have had help, but I could have done other things. I could have, rather than choosing to go to a doctor and receive pills and do whatever, I chose to do that. And that's exactly what I did. I did that for, well, long enough. And it's not a great experience, but nevertheless, I did it. And that was a form of how I dealt with my depression. That was my way of escaping. When you don't feel you belong anywhere and you have no self-esteem or you have no self-worth, well, that's what people do, like as an example. People do all kinds of things, but I'm just giving an example of what I did to deal with my depression. Okay, enough of that. Now, number six. This is very important. Clarity of feelings and emotions. For adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse, the key component of healing is to express and share their feelings. Excuse me. This can be achieved by survivors learning to acknowledge and to identify a wide variety of feelings and emotions, as well as finding ways to release them without hurting themselves or others. For example, a good support team can be extremely valuable at this time, like the peer support that I received here at the Gay House, or going to a psychotherapist or something along that line, or somebody knows about this stuff is what I'm getting at. Okay, step number seven, which is very, very important, which I've done when I've talked about it. And obviously, I'm here. Basically, is I'm regrouping. This phase involves many positive changes in survivors' attitudes and feelings. In this stage, they develop a new sense of trust in others, but most importantly, they start to trust themselves. This phase includes learning from the past, examining the present, and planning for the future. Many survivors have suggested that this stage represents the transition from merely existing to actively living. Well, there's a lot of truth in that, because when I first came here, I know I was ready to, well, put it this way, I was ready to do the, ready to go too far. Okay, I was ready to go far. Put it this way, I was at my wit's end. But there's one part of me that still wanted to try to see if I can get help for my problem, not truly understanding what my problem was. But nevertheless, I had one little glimmer of help, glimmer of hope rather, and I found the gatehouse. But regrouping is what we're talking about, and hence what I said, the last part of this the last part of what I read out of this paragraph. And it basically you're going from merely existing to actively living. Okay, I've talked about this. I look at myself like before I came here, and I look at myself now. I'm not at all the same person. And I'll be quite clear. Yes, I still have some things I need to work on. But damn it, if I wasn't present and being mindful, for example, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. Or if I didn't have some kind of insight to to what happened to me in a constructive manner, I wouldn't be sitting here talking about this right now. And the last stage is moving on. This stage includes a shift of focus from the negative experiences of my past to positive plans for the future. Painful feelings and emotions do not dominate memories from the past. Positive coping skills developed in earlier stages are enhanced and assist in survivors in moving on with their lives. Several coping skills that can help survivors move on include learning to love and accept themselves, recognizing and celebrating personal growth, creating a healthy support team, grieving current losses as they occur, learning to deal with stress effectively, and recognizing when it's time to let go of painful feelings and connect to the past. See, I've talked about that, and I've talked about how my past has affected me in my relationships, whether it be friends or intimate with someone special. And see, I like how Tom worded here in the past. The very last paragraph, the very last basic sentence, is recognizing and letting go of the painful feelings connected to my past. You know, it's a lot of work, and I'm still working on it. And I've seen it, and I've done things even myself, just to affirm what he's saying here. So it is definitely doable, and basically it falls down onto you as it is to me. If you want to move forward, you want to make the changes, or you want to stay stuck in the past. Now, I've given you some examples where I guess you could say maybe I am stuck in the past on some things. But the difference is, or rather, my point being is by saying that, is that I am being proactive now, and I have been proactive, and I'm trying to change that. That's not that easy. See, you know, when I first started talking here tonight, I talked about how this is a slow process. Well, this is an example of what I'm talking about. And I guess what I'm talking about myself really kind of pertains to what I'm talking about. It's a slow process. When you don't have that, when you don't have that self-confidence, and you don't have that self-confidence, and you're trying to build yourself up on that confidence, and you don't have the experience and the confidence to move forward on some things. This is why I'm talking right here, right now. This is helping me. You have to build your confidence so you can change some of these things. So basically, and I love saying this word, or rather I do and I don't, but being stuck, to get out of that stuckness from the past. And the example I gave you is an example of being stuck, like with myself. You know? But by falling back and recognizing these things I've talked about are your tools for moving forward. So, you know, I've talked about even journaling, and I can't talk about that enough. I mean, granted, not everybody likes to journal, because it involves sitting there and you got to use your head and you got to spell. That means you got to write stuff down. And talk to some people, they just don't have it in them to do that. Me, I was kind of like that. But to me, it was a combination of being lazy and I really didn't give a damn. So now I give a damn and I'm not really that lazy. So I do a lot of writing now, and it's healing for me. And I've talked to others that do a lot of journal writing, and it's very healing for them too. But the best thing about it, I found by doing this journaling, is that basically your thought process, you write it down, and as I've described about, like if you have something that triggers you, you write it down. Well, at least you have it there, so you know when if it bothers you. For example, now I'll give you an example. Now if you're gonna go. This is, it's a good enough example. So let's say, for example, you're late for work, and there's a lot of traffic, and suddenly you get pissed off because somebody cuts you off, and you get triggered. Everybody who gets triggered has different reaction. So rather than reacting in a negative manner, you've already written that down. You know what triggers you. So what you do, well, I'm going to recommend you or suggest you do, as an example, you write down a positive affirmation about something and you have it there in front of you so that if you feel triggered, example, then you can read this or say this to yourself to get you out of that moment where you're not triggered and you're ready to do however you may react. As an example, what you can do to stop this, or as I like to say, and as we say around the house here, by doing that, you're being mindful, for example, as I've said earlier, and you're going to pause, and you're going to say, okay, I'm not going to react this way. I'm going to smile, and I'm just going to drive on and get to work. Okay, I'm going to be late. I don't care. It's just the fact that that's what it's like around here in Toronto. Try driving around in this crazy place. There's construction everywhere. If you don't leave a half hour early, you're going to be late for anything. As an example, when I talk of, now you see kind of what I'm getting at here. Do you see the links I'm talking about? Do you see how these things kind of work together? You know, and again, I'll say it again. It doesn't mean that these things I talk about are necessarily necessarily reflect on you or you can relate to, but some of these things you might be able to, and some of these things you might be able to see how it affects you in that manner, you know. And it's important to be able to recognize these things. And if you can't recognize these things, then you can't make changes to change your, you know, your outcome of your day, for example. You know, why start your day off being triggered and feel like you want to, like, you know, jump off a bridge? I'm going way, way, way overboard by saying that, but I hope you hopefully you get my point. So you find another way of dealing with that trigger is what I'm getting at. You know, you find something positive that you can think about. As I'm talking about, you write something down, so you put it right there in front of you. You know that when you go out there in your car, you're trying to get to work, that certain things trigger you, and you find a way that you can be mindful and realize, hey, I'm not going to let that happen to me. And then you stop or pause, pause and you stop it and you think about something positive. That'll make your day so much better and it'll drop your anxiety levels like way down. Your heart pressure, your blood pressure too. You're like, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things. Like, it'll just make life so much easier. You know, I still get bouts of anxiety. And I have to fight with it. But generally, now at the level that I'm at now, again, thanks to the Gatehouse and support I get from other facilitators, and what I've learned along the way, my anxiety levels have dropped way down compared to what they used to be. I don't entrench my thoughts into something negative for too long. There's some things I'm still struggling with, but most of the time, I get past it and I move on. I don't let it drag me down. But it took a lot of work to figure that out, and that's why I'm trying to show you out there that there is ways of combating this being a victim or a survivor. You can get past it, and I'm just a prime example, as many others are, that you can do this. So, I talked about Tom Wilkin, and I want to read a little bit from Tom Wilkin. And okay, now I'm going to be quite clear. I know what I'm reading here, he makes reference to male survivors. So that's what I'm making reference to. And this, by the way, this book, like I say, I can't talk enough about this book. I know a few other people have read this book as well, and as well as the first edition. And if you want a good book for self-help on it, from a male's perspective, this is the one to get. Absolutely. And like I say, it's Rebuilding Your House of Self-Respect. It's been recovering from childhood sexual abuse. And this is a second edition of this book, again, by Tom Wilkin. And you Google it, and you can get it online, no trouble at all. And I'm going to just read this little part here. I'm not going to go too much more. I'm not going to go on too much more tonight. I think I've talked a lot about some things, and if you're just, you know, if you tune in, you're listening, you need to absorb what I'm talking about and process it. in order to move on to the next stage. And that's very important. And there's one gentleman I was explaining to the other day that when you come here, when you're going through the process of the stages through the weeks, you know, I know this may seem minimal to you or whatever to you, but this is very important about the process of coming through the house. When you're going through the 16 weeks, each week in our books, we have a stage of recovery, and we go through, so each week is a different one. So we always tell our participants to come here not to read weeks ahead. Stick with the week you're in. You can only process so much. You know, you've got your family to think about or whatever, your job, whatever the case may be, and you only have so much time. You've got a lot on the go, but we don't want you to be overloaded. So that's why we always tell you, just read one week at a time. Do one. You know, this is why I talk about being a slow process. You need to heal at your own time. Well, this is what it's all about. But in order for you to understand and to take all this in, you got all these things I've talked about. You know, all these thoughts and feelings that are inside you. How can you possibly process them all? Like, and more, if I continued on, like, in a short period of time, it's impossible. Unless you're, you know, like, Superman or something like that. But anyway, back to Tom. What are the effects of sexual abuse on male survivors? That's a really good question. So basically, let me be quite clear, I'm quoting Tom. The men in the group talked about a wide range of effects on how these effects influence them in their adult lives. They mentioned about depression, anxiety, shame, and guilt, feeling isolated from others, all these things I've talked about, feeling lonely or sad, angry, sleeping problems, feeling not as good as the next guy, not feeling satisfied with their sex life, which I've talked about that, and sexuality, inability to concentrate, memory problems, sexual dysfunction, a need to feel total control, a need to be controlled, suicidal thoughts, wishing to die, suicide attempts, feeling betrayed by their bodies, overeating, addictions, many different types of addictions. I've heard, you know, and I've always made reference to drugs and alcohol. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Inability to trust, problems with relationships, lack of self-esteem, isolation, frozen emotions like an iceberg. The extravagant need to please others, inability to relax, distorted view of reality, your own and others, fear of intimacy, trouble controlling your temper. I've talked about that with myself. Not feeling in touch with their bodies. Again, that kind of falls back to your sexuality, being comfortable with yourself, feeling that the abuse was their fault, and the confusion about their sexual identity. And it kind of like what I've been saying all through what I've been talking up till now. Excuse me. The vast majority of men partaking in a group have had negative experiences with support and treatment programs. They found the mainstream approach to impersonal and preferred a warmer, more supportive environment. Some clinical one-on-one approaches can fail to recognize that sexual abuse is not just an individual mental health issue. It is not restricted to the symptoms of the individual. It is, it is a societal problem. This sexual abuse and violence are perpetrated against are against the vulnerable. Society is generally extremely reluctant to view a man as a victim or as being vulnerable. Well, that's also false. False that they think that, but men can be vulnerable, just as vulnerable as women. It's not a one-way street. And I was talking about being vulnerable even before I got into what I'm talking about here now. You can't, what we've learned at the Gatehouse and what I've heard from others and abroad, you can't heal without being vulnerable. Is what I'm getting at. So it does not support male victims in a sexual healing in the process. The problem is substantial, that is, the symptoms are created by a sexual abusive situation. Once a man works through the pain connected to these experiences, heals and moves on, the symptoms are no longer necessary. Participants are very vocal about their negative experiences with psychiatry and what they felt over the felt over perception of medication or prescriptions and medication. Many men are seeking services, desperately desire to remove the label they connected with the mainstream approaches. It is important for survivors to not confuse abnormally of the abuse with the abnormally of themselves. What happened to these men was abnormal. Excuse me. It was wrong, and it was never should have happened to them. But as individuals, they are very normal. The various ways they have learned to cope with abuse and very normal responses are very abnormal situations. It is very important to separate the abuse from the individuality of the person. Many survivors see abuse as their identity. I've kind of covered that myself. I've talked about that in making reference to myself. The core of who they are as men heal in a group. They see the abuse as something that has happened to them. The abuse is no longer consuming, but only part of their past, and it does not take up every ounce of their energy. And it can, I'm telling you. It consumed me when I finally got free of, like, I mean, and I'm not saying this in a bad way. Well, I'm only saying this in a bad way because of how it affected me. When I finally had my free time to myself, where I had all this time to myself when I was talking about trying to find my own identity, that's what really, really screwed me up. Like, I had all this held back for so long. All my energy, my spare time, thoughts went into this. Well, what the hell's wrong with me? Why do I behave this way? And it was just one thing after another I did to myself. It was just a train out of control. Many of the techniques mentioned in this book I'm talking about will deal with issues and struggles and challenges both survivors and non-victims at the same time in their lives. Much of the approach of rebuilding your house of self-respect, or abbreviated as RYHSR, is enabled to adaptable to the concerns of other sexual abuse, especially others giving others grieving situations. It makes the situation unique for sexual abuse survivors, and where the RY, or rather the rebuilding your house of self-respect, was developed and tested is in the intensity of how men feel about themselves and how they interact with others. One important recurring theme that comes up in both individual counseling and support groups in these struggles with men encountering when they are trying to connect with themselves and others, and their environment, they must understand that violations took place in their relationships, where these men trusted the people who took advantage of them. Betrayal left them affected how they looked at later on in their life and relationships. They were wounded not only how they viewed others, but how they viewed themselves. Their relationships and issues are intensified for victims, such as fear or rejection, fear of being abandoned, trusting others, trusting themselves, inner thoughts not being good enough, combined with feelings of guilt, shame, and almost a rule, a key of component, RYHSR, is taking responsibility of developing these skills for positive relationships and changing how they unfairly view themselves. Men were wounded in unhealthy relationships, but healthy relationships can reverse the effects of victimization. See, what I'm saying is so true, and Tom's got it right. I've seen this, and that's what gives me inspiration to continue to fight to try to change these things that I'm still trying to change. And it is quite possible, quite doable. And you take it from me that, you know, I mean, you don't have to take it from me, but I'm telling you that it is quite possible. I'm sitting here talking about this. I'm not saying you should be, but or ought to be, or anything like that. But it is quite possible to move ahead, and I'm here to show you that you can. What happens to victims is wrong, and the ripple effects of abuse are troubling. It would be incorrect to say that these men, thus development of negative coping skills, many people have had creative in how they coped and with traumatic memories. As adults, the coping skills that were once necessary, many now work against them. Well, that is ever so true. Many people grow and become aware of how they hurt themselves as adults or loved ones. It becomes their responsibility to make an appropriate changes in their lives. It is not fair that they were victimized and they have to deal with the after effects, but it is their reality. You know, my reality, like a lot of other victims, before I came here, so dealing with my reality, like, really sucked. Like, you have, if, I mean, obviously you can't get in my head and I can't get in your head, but I'm telling you, if you're to get in my head and saw where I was, man, it sucked. Trust me, this is a much better place to be. Often men seek help connected to relationships. Parenting, work, stress, anger, depression, or other problems arise in their lives. However, as counseling process evolves into identity, sexual abuse of their main source of discomfort. Very often, an unresolved sexual abuse history of an engine driving these problems, and men can solve these primary presenting problems. Themselves, once they recover in group, or one-on-one, whatever the case may be, many men are reluctant to be present to the mental health or the abuse services. The approach and the exercises in this book, as I've been quoting, few exceptions, can be used effectively in men's groups with trust and the male voice, without assumptions that men are mentally ill. And, you know, that is ever so true. When I think about things that I've done in the past, and here I've got these professionals trying to give me medication or shock treatment to help me with my problem, and they don't know shit, as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's just so wrong. Like, I mean, okay, granted, this is only my opinion. I'm only expressing my opinion, and everybody will not have the same view as I have, but I don't have a very positive view in regards to getting help professionally from these sources. I've tried it in the past, and my experience has not been a good experience. So I will not endorse it myself. Again, I'll be quite clear. It's your choice. Everybody's different. And some people have far deeper problems than I have. And yeah, that would help. That might help them, but it certainly didn't help me, is all I'm saying. So again, like I say, it is your choice. Like, you have to figure that out. If you need help beyond peer support, then I say you go for it. Go for it. Get the help. You know, it's all important for yourself. You know, it's all part of taking care of yourself. Okay, men in the group have a favorite saying: you cannot change others, you can only change yourself. They may be bitter and anger about the past, but recognize their future belongs to them. Everything they do in their life now is on their choice, as I've been saying. It's all your choice. And they do have options. Anything they have learned from the past can be unlearned. Anything they choose new ways on working towards becoming a person they want to be, men from NYHSR groups are responsible for their own feelings and emotions, and they are responsible for theirs. Taking ownership of their individual actions is empowering. It's a great technique, emphasizing on the lengthy process that we could find involved. Like I said, there's no shortcut to this, and that's what this is making reference to. There's no shortcut. You do the process one step at a time, you sort it out, and it's like you're building a house. One brick at a time. One brick at a time. It is natural to feel bad before feeling good, but ownership of feelings, proactive group can support and reduce those bad times. We often talk in the RAHSR group about a former Jack Canfield mentioned is one of the self-esteem tapes. By Canfield says, this is another quote, says that E plus R equals O. That is, events of our lives plus response equals the outcome. Our definition of insanity includes responding to the events in the same way and expecting the different outcome. sexual abuse recovery is all about changing the R's, and these men are learning to respond to differently to events so that they have a more desirable outcome. This change is not easy. It takes hard work. It takes a lot of soul searching, as I've been talking about. We must look inwards to change our response. Group members said that they spent their lives searching outside of themselves for answers and their problems. They were looking for that one person or that one thing that could heal them. And I can relate to that because I've done the same thing, often searching from outside in. Anyway, the RYHSR group is all about learning to change your approach to life from the inside out. They were amazed on the answers and the questions they were within all along. Their own greatest resources was and is themselves. Nobody can do their work for them. And that's so true. We always try, when we're facilitating here, we always try to push a little bit to go past that envelope about, you know, when I talk about vulnerability and I've talked about fear. Well, you know, when you have that fear and not wanting to let yourself go or to be vulnerable, it really can hold you back. But I'm telling you, once you let some of that fear go and you're vulnerable, wow, it's such an incredible, you know, change for yourself or transformations that I like to make reference to. Nobody can do the work for them, as I've said. In other words, others may assist them on their journeys, but the journeys, basically, your journey is your journey. You know, it's nobody else's but your own. Nobody can grieve their losses or feel them for you. The NYSSR group provided support, information for these men, but the men did the work. See, these journeymen, you know, they did it themselves. That's what I'm getting at. These guys did the work themselves, as we're taught to do here. So, I really hope you got something out of what I was talking about. And God, I can't believe I talked that much. Anyway, I hope you get the premise of what I'm talking about tonight, and you see how it's related to a certain degree, what I was talking about last week, and I keep talking about that ball or that mesh wire that's all tangled up and weaved together. You see how all these little things kind of tie in together, and will you know, we'll have you react in the ways I've talked about. It's so important in your recovery to recognize these things, and yes, it hurts. When you start discovering these things, but that's part of being vulnerable and rediscovering yourself. This is what it's all about. And that's why I've been open about myself. And by me doing so, it's going to help me. I know it's going to help me because I don't want to live as I've lived in the past. And I'm here to talk about to show you if I can change, then you can change. And to me, that's all worth it. And really, really, really important. But what I'm talking about is I'm exercising my voice, and that is so important in this healing process. And this is what I love about coming to the house. You know, I'm with these men and women both. I have to say both men and women both. I do both groups, and plus I also facilitate with men and women, and that is very, very empowering. Hearing it from both sides. And it's very, very encouraging, and it gives me strength to want to keep fighting on. Okay, well, you know, enough about that. I've rambled on this long, and as far as I'm concerned, it's good to ramble because it's all part of your growth. It's part of my growth, and it's just showing. I've showed you ways that you can dig deep in your soul and figure these things out. And this is a long topic. I mean, I could still go on probably another hour about some things I didn't even cover. And they're all kind of related to this. And this is where I wish I had another person because then we could talk about this more. But which I will do in the future. I have many more shows I'm going to do, and I'm going to keep going back and forth, back and forth. And that's all part of the healing process. But I must thank you very much tonight, but first I want to rehash some things, and one of the things I want to talk about the programs at the Gatehouse that we offer. Now, we have a adult support program, and now I'm talking about just, now we have a men's program, we have a women's program, and they're both 15 weeks long, and basically, at the given time you come to the house, it's always between 7 and 9 p.m. Usually, they have certain days of the week. You have to call the house, baseball care, rather. Tuesdays are usually for women. Wednesdays are usually for men. And Thursdays, we have a co-ed group, which we call Phase 2. And I get an awful lot out of that. But the Phase 2 program is 16 weeks versus 15 weeks. You know, it all depends, too, on a lot of things on the availability of space here and the time of year that it is, because sometimes holidays may fall in between, and either you'll lose a week or you'll gain a week. Typically, you lose a week or even 2 weeks, depending on the time of the year. I'm talking like winter time. There's always something going on. And I know last winter I did a couple of groups, and we ended up missing a couple of nights, and that's only because of the weather. And I must point out, Sundays we have a drop-in from 2 to 4 p.m., but you must have completed the Phase 1 program, or at least be in it and have gone through maybe partway through it in order to participate in this. And I must also, this is great, this is fantastic. I must really point this out as well. We have a young adult support group as well, and it's an 8-week program as well. And it's from 18 to 24 years of age, and they usually do that on Thursdays early in the evening. And there's one more I should point out to you that we do. Where is it? We do have a couples program as well. And here it is, for partner or partner group, and they usually have that on they would have it on Monday, or they would have it on the weekend, depending on the availability of space and how many participants will partake in it. But this is only, they've condensed it from 8 weeks to 4 weeks now, but nevertheless, I've heard great things about it. I would highly recommend, if you are, you're in a relationship, it doesn't matter whether you're, like I said, gender, or rather, sexual orientation, it does not really matter whether you're straight, gay, lesbian, transgender, it doesn't really matter. We cater to all that. Or if you just have a friendship with somebody, even as an example, you can come, and if you're having issues, depending on how close you are to your friend, it's good resources. It's good peer support. I've been hearing in regards to this. I really recommend it, and coming and checking it out. There's something else here that Maria at the Gatehouse here asked me to say, and let me just find it here. I don't think I covered it. Where is it? Oh, yes. One thing we started doing here at the house, and I guess we'll probably do it to the winter time, and we'll probably, or till the snow flies, but every Thursday from 11:30 to 12:30, our Gatehouse director, Brad, he heads a Kung Fu session, which we have outside in the Healing Garden. It's very, very humbling, and if you'd like to come and try, anybody is welcome. It's outside. Brad is great. If you don't know, just come dress comfortably. Obviously, towards the weather, comfortable footwear. Thor, you're not gonna, you know, he's gonna just teach you some good, you know, self care. And I would really highly encourage you to come and check it out. And that's every Thursday from 11:30 to 12:30, and it's in the Healing Garden. In fact, I wanted to take some pictures of it tonight, and I never did, but I'm definitely going to do that because they had the grand opening last Sunday. It is it's beautiful out there. It's very well laid out, and I recommend it if you're in Toronto and you're down here in the Lakeshore, 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard East. Come and check it out because it is beautiful. And like I say, we're still taking donations, whether it be monetary or if you have some plants or something like that, you want to donate. Sold anything. We'll take anything. We're grateful if you would come by and donate that. We would be grateful. Like I've stated again, the program, We are basically rely on funding from outside donations in order for this place to make work, and any kind of help would be greatly appreciated. Anyway, I guess I should pretty much call it tonight. Again, I thank you for your time, and have a great week. And more importantly, I want you to take care of yourself. Like, really take care of yourself. Don't do anything silly or sad. Call someone. Call someone you trust. Call the gatehouse. Talk to somebody. And like I say, take care of yourself. And I would really appreciate any feedback. I've talked about this before. I've talked about it with a few people here in the house, and we would really love to put together some kind of peer support over the phones. So basically, I mean, we have peer support over the phones, but we want to step it up another level. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a group level, but we would like to offer more peer support over the phone. If you're out in the middle of nowhere and you have no way coming down here, well, how the hell are you going to get any help? But if you're able to call and you have a phone, most people have one of those. If you don't have internet access, at least you have a phone. And we would really appreciate any thoughts you may have on this. So please email us at thegatehouse.org, or you can email me at personaltransformation@thegatehouse.org as well. And I would appreciate any comments, bad or good. I don't care. I want to hear about it. Just please let us know. And like I say, have a great week. Take care of yourself. And oh, yeah, the weekend. Oh, that's coming up. Tomorrow's Friday. And it's so nice outside. It's supposed to be nice this weekend, and we're in the fall already. Anyway, take care of yourself. Have a great week. And I will talk to you next week. And as far as what I'm going to be talking about next week, I'm not going to tell you right now. I got a few ideas, but I just need to confirm a couple of things, and I'll probably just post it on Blog Talk on Sunday when I usually do my script for the week. So have a great week, and thank you again, and until the next time. Bye now.